congressional leaders and the White House have struck a deal to send hundreds of billions of dollars to the Small Business Administration to shore up initiatives, including the Paycheck Protection Program. That bipartisan legislation passed the Senate today. It will now need to be approved by the House before making its way to President Trump. While lawmakers have expressed enthusiasm over this latest deal, there are still some concerns over the longevity of the loan program and how large businesses have been able to get money meant for smaller businesses. David Cannon is a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. David, welcome back to Central Time.
Good to be with you.
Well, this is, David, on top of the $2 trillion overall package. It included this paycheck protection program aimed at propping up small businesses as they deal with closures. Now we have the news today that it passed the Senate. What have you made of the politics, some finger-pointing over the last week or so as they try to get this done?
Well, right. The thing that got all the attention a couple days ago was when, you know, after the original $300-some billion for small businesses ran out last week, it was made public that some large chain restaurants like Shake Shack and Potbelly and Ruth's Chris Steakhouse all received tens of millions of dollars from this small business program that was intended for, you know, smaller restaurants and not for large publicly owned, you know, corporate chains. And so that generated a lot of public outcry and pressure to, you know, get this right this time. Shake Shack, in fact, returned the money that they had received because they got so much negative feedback for that. And so there was an urgent need to get more money into this program because small businesses are the ones that have really been hit hard by this. And some larger corporations did get money in that initial $2.3 trillion package. Airline industry especially received quite a few emergency payments, you know, from the government in that initial spending. And so this was an effort to, you know, revitalize that small business program to the tune of about $370 billion. And then the other political debates happened over whether or not to include money also for hospitals, for testing for the virus, and also then for support for state and local governments. And so the Democrats were pushing for all three of those. Republicans were, they wanted to keep this just focused on small businesses and to set those issues aside for later debate. But the Democrats were able to prevail on two of those 3 points. They got money for the hospitals, $75 billion, $25 billion for testing, which they argue is going to be necessary for being able to get economies open back up again, because we can't really safely do that until we have much broader testing than we have had. The Republicans held the line, though, on no additional aid for state and local governments at this point.
Yeah, amid all of this, and you mentioned the bigger companies, and we keep hearing reports of smaller businesses who ended up being too late to the game. The money had dried up there. If you're, I guess, a larger business, you can ask your accounting department to apply for this kind of thing. If you're a small business, you are the accounting department, probably, if you're the owner. Is there any indication that in this new money that's allotted here, they're going to try to make sure it goes to those littler businesses this time for sure?
Well, that's the idea, and I don't know what kind of safeguards are going to be in place to make sure that that happens. Because the other thing that was happening, in addition to the problems that you mentioned, is the fact that these bigger corporations had ties with the banks that were providing the loans. So J.P. Morgan, some of the other, you know, bigger lenders already had established relationships with these large corporations, and so they were able to get through more quickly and easily because they already had, you know, this ongoing relationship, whereas the smaller businesses, even if they maybe, you know, had a loan, you know, with one of these banks, they weren't, you know, as high in the pecking order in terms of getting their phone calls returned, and so they, you know, just were left out without the money then last week when the money ran out. And so the hope is with this new round of funding that they'll be able to resolve some of those more procedural problems that were in place for the, you know, first couple weeks the program was running, but there's no guarantees it's going to work that much better this time around.
Talking to David Cannon from UW-Madison, political scientist there, looking at the Senate passage today of a plan that's going to boost funding for small businesses to help them get through closures. It also includes, as we heard, some money for hospitals and for COVID-19 testing. Backing away from the details of all of this a little, David, Congress and the White House, especially in a time of divided government, not notorious for being able to get stuff done quickly. What do you make of the passage of this, the three previous parts of the economic relief? And you know, there's a lot of storm back and forth here, but ultimately they did pass stuff.
Right, and in fact, passing it unanimously. So that the first big package, you know, passed by a 96-0 vote in the Senate. I mean, you can't get a 96-0 vote in the Senate typically to, you know, praise mother apple pie and baseball. It's like, you know, it's just, you know, they can't agree on anything these days. So it's quite remarkable, actually, that they were able to come together on these, you know, huge spending bills to try to get the economy the support it needs right now, not to go into a, you know, complete tailspin. Now, on the other hand, you know, there was a lot of you know, back and forth and not sort of agreeing on all what the priority should be in these bills. But that's the nature of the political process. That's the way it's always going to work. You know, when you have, you know, big debates on massive spending bills like this, there is going to be, you know, some compromise on both sides. And I think we saw that today with the extra funding for the hospitals and testing, which wasn't included in the original bill. But, you know, Democratic leaders pushed hard for those, and they got those. But they didn't get the additional funding they needed for that they were advocating for state and local. So that's the way the compromise process should work. And so I think Congress is doing its job right now of getting this emergency aid out when it's really needed.
I want to listen to one of those Democratic leaders you just mentioned, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer on CNN, talking about the things above and beyond the small business support. Here's a listen.
This is one of the last things that we had to hold out for. We do believe the states need money. We do believe, as the president and the governors do, that it's a partnership. But we need a national strategy, as the governors have said, to get the kinds of testing that's done, to get the contact tracing, to make the tests free. You need a significant federal involvement. You need a national strategy. And the president and Mnuchin and Meadows agreed to that, to their credit, and that will be in the proposal.
So again, that was Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. So is this enough money when it comes to that testing and contact tracing, as you read it, David, to meet the needs of states, to get enough testing and tracing to open up a lot of businesses?
Well, getting the money is just the first step, because we still need, you know, even like nasal swabs. We ran out of nasal swabs, and that's a key part of the testing. And so just getting the money in place is the first step in making sure we've got the supplies that we need. So it's going to be a while, I think, still before the states have all of the supplies they need to do adequate testing, because I've seen estimates saying that we need to do somewhere between 3 to 5 times as much testing as we're doing right now. And we have nowhere near the capacity to do that kind of testing, you know. And with the $25 billion in spending for that, it's definitely going to help, but it's still going to take some time.
Let's talk about the thing that didn't get included in this package approved by the Senate today. As you mentioned earlier, the state and local funding supports. And that's, as I understand it, David, not specifically for testing, but it's because state and local governments, you know, are employers. They're trying to meet payroll, keep up their own infrastructure, and they're probably facing declines in tax revenue with the decline in economy. How important is that, that they get some kind of relief, if any, from the federal government?
Well, it's really important because, unlike the federal government, state governments have to balance their budget. So you can't go into the next fiscal year with a huge hole in your budget. You have to, you know, by state law, you have to balance your budgets every year. And so you're absolutely right that states and local governments as well are in a real bind right now because tax revenue is drying up, and especially with the postponement of the April 15th filing for taxes. What happened in pushing that back to July 15th, that means that, you know, most of the taxpayers who owed money ended up not filing. They'll take advantage of that additional 3 months. Those who are getting refunds went ahead and filed. And so the state government revenue is going to really be in a pinch because, you know, they don't have that luxury of going out and just borrowing the trillions of dollars the way the federal government is right now. States can't do that in the same way. They're much more reliant on the tax revenue coming in. And so having that 3 months pushing back of the tax filing is going to create even more of a short-term crunch for the state revenues. And so that's why Democratic leaders were pushing so hard to try to get some additional support for state and local governments is that they're facing all these different economic pressures outside of funding just for the COVID crisis.
We continue our conversation about small business relief during coronavirus-related shutdowns. David Cannon is with us, professor of political science at UW-Madison. We're looking at an apparent agreement between members of Congress and the White House, passed by the Senate now, aimed at putting more money into a program that, among other things, helps sustain small businesses during shutdowns around the country. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What do you think about this move? Is it a good idea for the federal government to provide more support for small businesses? If you are a small business owner, have you applied for assistance under the previous plan? Were you able to get it, or had they run out of money by the time you tried to get in? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Let's bring on a caller now. Matt is with us in Rochester, Minnesota. Matt, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, Matt?
So I applied through Wells Fargo for my SBA PPP program, and I know that originally Wells was only able to give out about $2 million of the $350 million. At least that's what I was told. And I was wondering if they're setting restrictions on banks like that for the second wave of funding.
Matt, thanks for the call. Yeah, a lot of this, David, went through big banks. You mentioned J.P. Morgan earlier, Wells Fargo, another one. Do we know, does each bank have a cap on how much it can give out? I'm not sure of the details on that.
Yeah, I hadn't heard anything about the caps with this round of funding. My understanding is that it's based on the applications that they receive, and typically it will be, you know, through the same banking institution where the business has the ongoing relationship with them. And so I'm sure that there is some, you know, sort of way that they have to allocate the money if they are getting to a point again where they're going to be running short. But at this point, my understanding is it's really more first come, first serve is what's intended for this round of funding.
Matt, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. I know, David, some Democratic members of Congress have asked for data about how the money went out in the previous round, who it went to, how it was allocated, what kind of criteria were there. What do we know about oversight within the executive branch of who's making sure this money gets used as intended by Congress?
Well, yeah, this has been a real problem, I think, right now with the massive amount of money that has been going out already. It's just making sure that it is being spent appropriately. I mean, I think there are two problems that I've heard about that really have prevented a lot of small businesses from getting the money they need. One is that the system just couldn't handle the volume of requests they were getting. So the system was crashing. I read about reports where a small business owner would spend hours, you know, online, then on the phone, and on hold for, you know, many, many hours, and then go back online and the system would crash. And so part of it is just a technology problem and just an infrastructure problem of not having the infrastructure in place that can handle this demand. But then also there seemed to be some confusion, I think, on the side of the banks in terms of, you know, what businesses qualified for the loans. And I think there just wasn't good enough guidance from the federal government in terms of how they were supposed to process these applications. And so the small businesses thought they were doing everything right in terms of applying, and they still would get turned down by the banks. And the banks thought that they were complying with what they were supposed to be doing. And so there clearly was a lot of confusion, I think, on both sides, and there just wasn't clear enough guidance in terms of how this was supposed to work. And so I think any time when a program is put into place on this scale over such a short period of time, it's not surprising there'll be some bumps in the road, but there were some huge, like, potholes in the road for this. It just really was not being implemented very smoothly. And hopefully the second round will go a little bit better now.
Yeah, a lot of the early debates about how that $2 plus trillion economic recovery package could work came down to, okay, we might be able to do this better, but those might be things that slow it down, and speed is of the essence here. Is there a case to be made for that? We needed money to come into the economy, and we needed it soonish?
Absolutely. And that's one reason that they did try to implement these programs through existing programs. But again, the problem was that the infrastructure in place couldn't handle it. Unemployment compensation is the other one that just got crushed over the last, you know, 4 weeks. They had, you know, volumes of requests that were, you know, tenfold, 20-fold as much as they would get in a normal week, and the system just couldn't handle it. And so, yes, they needed to get money out the door, but they didn't have the system in place that could deliver that as quickly as it needed to be delivered.
Talking to David Cannon, professor of political science at UW-Madison, looking at economic recovery efforts, the latest additional money aimed at propping up small businesses as they deal with closures in states around the country. The package also includes some money for hospitals and for COVID-19 testing. David, it pops into my head when we think back to the New Deal, a lot of the so-called alphabet soup recovery programs, the successful ones are the ones we remember. But there were a lot of ones that kind of crashed and burned early, or just kind of fizzled as attention turned to other things. In a crisis like this, we're trying stuff and not all of it's going to stick.
Well, right. And that clearly happens in any kind of crisis response like this. But the kind of numbers we're talking about right now, though, dwarf anything from the New Deal in terms of, you know, the size of the economy and the speed with which we had the number of people filing for unemployment. It dwarfs anything that even happened during the Great Depression, you know, over that four-week period. And so this really is unprecedented in terms of what's happened and how the government is trying to respond. So you have to have some sympathy for how difficult this has been. You know, but even with that position of being generally sympathetic to the problem they faced, you know, this definitely could have been done more smoothly. And then the other thing you hear about too is this sort of the typical congressional like pork barrel stuff that slides its way into the bill. The one that was only found out about just about a week ago that raised a lot of eyebrows was the $190 billion write-off for real estate investors that had been turned down in the original Trump tax relief bill that was passed. But then they snuck that into this bill to allow write-offs for 2018 and 2019 that have nothing to do with COVID at all, but were written into this law to actually allow real estate investors to write down their losses, you know, from the previous 2 years. So stuff like that sneaks in as well, and you're like, oh my gosh, why did they allow that to happen?
Are there other things like that, David, that you're watching that maybe, given all the news that is out there, things that we might be overlooking?
Well, that's the big one, I think, that didn't get as much attention as I think it should have. And, you know, people did talk about it when it came out. And, in fact, Chuck Schumer pushed for trying to get that included in this new bill as well, and were shut down right away by Mitch McConnell and others, saying that was not going to happen. We're not going to revisit stuff from the $2.3 trillion package, because some Democratic senators were just outraged when they found out that was in the bill, because they didn't even realize that was part of the package they were voting on. And so I think that's the biggest one I've seen. I'm sure there are other smaller things tucked in there that'll, you know, come out over the next few months, but that's the biggest one I've seen reported on.
And briefly, as we wrap up, David, what are you watching for next?
Well, this is not the end, for sure, and we're going to see some more bills over the next couple of months, because, you know, it's pretty clear that the economic dislocation from this pandemic is going to go into the summer. You see some states now, like Georgia, are trying to open up businesses. Texas probably won't be far behind. But we'll see a second wave, I think, of the outbreak that happens, you know, when you have people, you know, trying to get back to more, you know, normal kind of social contact. I think we'll get a second wave of the disease, which means that this is going to be going well into the fall, probably, in terms of economic implications.
David, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Okay, good to be with you.
That's David Cannon, professor of political science at UW-Madison. He joined us today to talk about the Small Business Administration and a congressional plan to inject more money into the agency in order to shore up businesses amid the COVID-19 outbreak. That plan has now passed the Senate. We'll go to the House, and then if they pass it, to the president.